Multi-source. Playmaking. Dancing by Roger McGough. When I'm dancing, I forget everything. I become the music. The band takes me over. I sing. I'm the singer. I play the riffs. I'm the lead guitar. Ba-boom, boom. I'm the bass. But most of all, I'm the drummer. The drums. I'm the drums. I'm drums on legs. The drums. 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 Drums on legs. The beat. The beat takes me over. When the music stops, it's so quiet, I can hear myself sweating.
Spring Recital by Sherry Cootie. I put on a prissy white sailor dress, bring a copy of Bach and my parents, and go to my spring recital. 6 Beethovens and 10 Mozarts later, it's my turn. I start into my piece. All of a sudden, I hear clump, and then clump, clump, clump. I look out of the corner of my eye, and several parents are lying on the floor. I can't figure out what's going on. Then old Mr. McMurphy starts snoring, and I realize everyone is asleep. Now parents are dropping faster than grace notes. Through the noise of falling bodies, I can barely hear myself play. I speed up and play louder. Bang! Bang as I hit the chords. Clunk, clunk, clunk as more bodies fall. I look at the audience. Only my mother is left. I see her tilting. And so I jump up and yell, "Done!" With a jolt, my mother wakes up and starts clapping and screaming, "Bravo, bravo!" I bow, then pick my way through the bodies to my seat. I smile to myself. I'm a hard act to follow. Mary on Valentine's Day by Peter D. Remember in grammar school when we all gave out valentines? When you give out 20 and you'd get one. Happened to you too, huh? Good. Anyway, I'm really glad we don't do that in high school. There's some advantages to being sophisticated. Fourth grade. That was the year I gave out 20 and only got one. From Ursula Pitt, who misspelled her name and mine, Mary Jones. That was a horrible day. I went up on the roof when I got home and screamed at the pigeons so I wouldn't cry. I really hate Valentine's Day. Thank God in high school we don't have to go through that dumb cardboard box covered with cheap crepe paper and phony lace routine. You know, where you put your valentines in, and then later they give them out, and the pretty girls get 50 and keep walking back and forth to their seats like grinning idiots. That time that I accidentally tripped Celeste Jordan with her nose in her 15th one and not even looking where she was going, the entire class turned on me, said I did it on purpose. That was a lie. I know who I did it to on purpose. Cassie McGuire, in 6th grade when she hollered, "Oh, it's from Richie Forbes!" Like it was a big surprise to her. A big, huge, overblown, tasteless valentine that anybody with class would be ashamed to get. She cut her knee when she went down. So as you can see, it's not a day that brings out the best in me. Christmas I can handle, and New Year's Eve is no big problem. But whoever invented Valentine's Day, I'd like to smash in the mouth for the grief it gives me. Used to give me. I'm past all that now. Course we won't go into prom night and all that stupid nonsense that puts me up on the roof with pigeons on spring nights. I'd rather be doing something more constructive with my life. But at least in high school, Valentine's Day is no big deal. Oh, sure. I see the private exchanges and hugs around the lockers, but that doesn't bother me. It just reminded me of the bad days. In high school, I'm happy to be independent, beyond all that garbage that they no longer openly foist on us. If I ever have any power, I'm going to banish Valentine's Day parties in grammar schools, because it's very damaging to kids. Really, if I wasn't so intelligent, I could be a very bitter person about those formative years I was on display as a loser. It's barbaric. Think about it.
Mary?
Hi, Roger.
Happy Valentine's Day.
That's for me?
Just a little card.
Roger, it's beautiful.
I'm glad you don't think it's silly.
Silly? A Valentine?
Some people think they're stupid.
Really? Stupid? Not me.
I'm glad you like it.
It's the nicest one I ever got since the fourth grade.
Will you go to the prom with me, Mary?
You're asking me to the prom?
From the bottom of my Valentine.
To the prom? Me you're asking?
Yeah. Will you go?
Wow.
What?
Wait till I tell the pigeons.
The Theater of Childhood by Geraldine Connolly. My children love to disappear into the cellar, shutting the white door to the kitchen behind them. I hear their footsteps drum roll on the wooden steps. Their whispering voices float up through the joists and turn to high, shrill laughter. They are down there practicing. I imagine the chenille bedspread they use as a curtain, rising and falling on their dramas. They play office and library and dance club. They spread themselves into life the way oil spreads across water, shining. I hear, "Pardon me, dear," and loud shouting. I hear swords knocking together, the voices of babies and crones, the howl of wolves. They are constructing a village whose roof slates occasionally clatter to the floor. Draped in shawls, they steal strawberries from the garden of the old woman behind the turret of furnace, who, busy with shovel and fire, does not see them for now, and therefore does not break the spell.
Dear Bruce Springsteen by Kevin Major. April 5th. Dear Bruce Springsteen, this letter might never get to you. If it does, it might take years before you get around to reading it, because you must get tons of mail. I'm going to write it anyway. You see, I just want to say how much I like your music, and to tell you a bit about myself. I don't want to take up much of your time. You probably got millions of things on your mind, but I figure if you ever had a few spare minutes, you wouldn't mind listening. That's the kind of person I figure you are. My name is Terry Blanchard. The story goes that my father named me after a buddy of his from high school who was killed in a motorcycle accident. I heard someone say once that the old man was going to go riding with him that day, but changed his mind at the last minute. It's just what I heard. He never really talked about it. Hey, you know what I just figured out? That you're old enough to be my father. In fact, my old man and you must be about the same age. Weird, right? You're not that much alike, though. I'm getting off track. I'm 14. I'm in the 9th grade at school. I've got a sister who's 10. The place where I live is not very big. 15,000 people, maybe. Big enough to have a McDonald's and a few other things, if that means anything. There are a lot worse places to live, I guess. It used to be better, when the mill wasn't getting rid of people. Bored yet? Guess I shouldn't be taking up your time. Anyway, I just want to say that I really get off on your music, and that my biggest dream is to see you in concert someday. Man, from the clips I've seen on TV, the concerts must be wicked. Yours truly, Terry. May 4th. Dear Bruce Springsteen, I know I got no real right to dump all this personal stuff on you. I thought about it yesterday after I sent the last letter. Here I am, probably making a fool of myself, going on and on about my life to someone I never met. Then, when I thought about it some more, I felt like I almost know you. I've read everything I can lay my hands on that's been written about you. I've gone to the library and dug out old copies of Rolling Stone from 6 and 7 years ago. I've read 3 full-length books on you, 3 times each. I play your music all the time. Man, my ghetto blaster practically spits back any tape that's not yours. And, in a way, you're sort of a connection between me and my father. For my 14th birthday, he gave me one of your tapes. Then a week after that, he was gone. It was the first time he ever went out of his way to give me a present himself. Usually, it was something from the both of them. I can hear him now when he handed it to me. It's about time you got over that heavy metal crap. Listen to something decent for a change. He gave me the tape, and he never said nothing else about it. I knew he was into your music a lot. He never listened to it much in the house, mostly when he was driving the old van we used to have. Mostly then by himself. The 4 of us were in the van once, and he put on Nebraska. Mom made him take it off because, she said, it sounded too depressing. He sort of grunted something about she didn't know what good music was and popped out the tape. She said, if you're going to spend money we can't afford on music, then you might as well spend it on something that'll cheer you up. He ignored her. After that, he never played your music much when Mom was around. But I know the tapes must have been used a lot. He had a special place in the van where he kept them. Once when it was just the 2 of us driving someplace to pick up some secondhand furniture, he put on The River. The only song of yours I know from that tape was Hungry Heart. Everything was sort of quiet between us, so I said to him that I liked that song. He said he liked it too. He liked the words. I never thought about that much till after he left. Then I bought the tape and started paying attention to the words. The old man's got a hungry heart. So now you know some of the reasons why I'm writing these crazy letters. There's more to it than that. I got dreams about things I want to do when I get older. Dream on, right? Terry. June 28th. Dear Bruce Springsteen, I'm calmed down a bit from the last letter. Man, I gotta ask you something. Did you know when you were my age that one day you'd be really good at what you're doing? I practice a lot. I know all the chords and everything. I got parts of certain songs down pretty good. I even started fooling around with the idea of writing a song myself. I got one verse and part of another one done. Then I start thinking my chances of making it one day aren't too good. Man, there must be thousands of guys with dreams and plans just like I got. I've been listening to some of your old stuff a lot lately, especially Growing Up from Asbury Park. I like that song. It took a lot of listening to get at what you're saying, and I still don't think I got it all. But anyway, one thing I do know you're saying in that song is that you got to be your own person and forget all about the crap people fire at you. You got to believe in yourself and stand up for who you are. I believe that. The people in school who have anything to do with me, I can count on one hand. Some of the teachers give me a hard time. Mom and Amanda and me haven't been hitting it off too good lately. But I think I can handle all that. I got my sights set somewhere else, away from this place. One day I'll show them all. Then they'll be wishing they treated me better. I made it through all my exams, in case you're wondering. Math, I got a 53. Mom said she was happy. She was surprised, I know that for a fact. She tried not to show it. She never said nothing about what she'd give me for passing, and I never asked. But one of these days, a new something that I don't need is going to show up in my room. I'm not complaining. Now I got 2 months of summer vacation. So long from the stratosphere, Terry. October 30th. Dear Bruce Springsteen, it's been a long time since I wrote you. I've thought about it a lot, and I think maybe I'll make this one the last one. When I started all this, I really needed someone I could talk to. Lucky you, right? Now I'm going to give you a break and shut up. The past few months have been a bit crazy. The letters that I wrote to you are the one thing that tied it all together. Sometimes I wonder if you ever read any of the letters. Maybe now that your tour is over, you might get around to it. Like I said before, it wouldn't really bother me if I knew you didn't. I kind of like to think you did, but I know you still got a lot of things to be doing. Maybe someday I'll hear from you. Who knows? I read once that after a concert, some guy you never met before started talking to you and asked you to his house for a meal with his family, and you said yes. Man, that offer goes for me, too. Mom could cook up her famous spaghetti. Of course, I'd have to call up the old man and get him to make a special trip here. We'd have a lot to talk about. That's an open invitation, if you're ever in this part of the country. Maybe you'll come closer to where I live on your next tour. You've got a lot of fans around here. If you do, I'll be the first one to buy tickets. But no matter if you come near here or not, I'll still be going to see you. That's the one promise I made to myself, to see you in concert the next time you're on tour. I'll be the one in the front row looking like he's in heaven. My time for writing letters will be taken up with writing to the old man, I hope. I owe him one now. It's me that's being the slacker this time. Well, I guess this is the end of the line, Bruce Springsteen, man. I was going to call you just Bruce for once, but I couldn't bring myself to do it. Anyway, this is about it. Remember, take it easy. Take a break, you've been touring for a long time. Enjoy your life, man. And remember, if you ever have kids, spend lots of time with them. And keep the music coming. I'll be watching out for a new album. Yours truly, man, Terry Blanchard.
Saturdays by Mary Fong. In my hands, I catch round rainbows, oiled rainbows that slip and shift on the outside of a wet bubble. Swirls of color leap through a wire like a lion out of a circus ring. I can make rainbows like a ringmaster throwing lions to the sky.
The Circus, or One View of It, by Theodore Spencer. Said the circus man, "Oh, what do you like best of all about my show? The circular rings, three rings in a row, with animals going around, around, tamed to go running round, around, and around, round, around they go. Or perhaps you like the merry-go-round, horses plunging sedately up, horses sedately plunging down, going around the merry-go-round. Or perhaps you like the clown with a hoop, shouting, rolling the hoop around, or the elephants walking around in a ring, each trunk looped to a tail's loop, loosely ambling around the ring. How do you like this part of the show? Everything's busy and on the go. The peanut men cry out and sing. The round fat clown rolls on the ground. The trapeze ladies sway and swing. The circus horses plunge around. The circular rings, three rings in a row. Here they come and here they go. And here you sit," said the circus man, "around in a circle to watch my show. Which is show, and which is you? Now that we're here in this circus show, do I know? Do you know? But hooray for the clowns and the merry-go-round, the painted horses plunging round, the live, proud horses stamping the ground, and the clowns and the elephants swinging around. Come to my show! Hooray for the show! Hooray for the circus all the way round!" said the round, exuberant circus man. "Hooray for the show!" said the circus man.
The Efficient Babysitter by Peg Carrot. When Mrs. Anderson asked me to babysit, I was so thrilled I didn't even ask how much she intended to pay me. I figured anything was better than nothing, which was how much money I had when she called. Nobody ever asked me to babysit before. I have two older sisters, and they sit for people all the time. If Barbara is busy when a customer calls, the customer asks if Janet can do it. If Janet has a job when someone calls, the people ask for Barbara. Nobody ever asked for me. Is there some law that says girls make better babysitters than boys? Week after week, Janet and Barbara raked in the money on Friday and Saturday nights, while I sat home, penniless and bored. So you can see why I jumped at the chance when Mrs. Anderson asked if I would like to babysit with Frankie, Howard, and Brendan. She was going to a luncheon and told me to come to her house at noon. I was determined to do an outstanding job. I would be the most efficient sitter she ever had. I got there right on time, but Mrs. Anderson was waiting for me out in front, as if I was late. She told me the boys were eating lunch, and she'd be home by 4. Then she got in her car and started the engine. She seemed in a hurry to leave, so I waved and went inside. Mrs. Anderson was wrong. The boys were not eating their lunch. They were throwing their lunch at each other. This might not have been so bad if they had bologna sandwiches, but they had SpaghettiOs. Frankie had SpaghettiOs in his hair, Howard had a big splotch of SpaghettiOs on the front of his shirt, and Brendan was just winding up and taking aim at the kitchen window. "Cut that out!" I yelled as loud as I could. "We don't like SpaghettiOs," Brendan said. "Then don't eat them," I told them. "Feed them to the dog or put them down the garbage disposal, but quit throwing them around the kitchen." Frankie and Howard had a fight over who got to put their SpaghettiOs down the disposal first. Brendan had a temper tantrum because he wanted to give his to the dog, but they didn't have a dog, and their cat wouldn't come when he called her. I finally got everyone calmed down, and I ate Brendan's SpaghettiOs. I used paper towels and Windex to get the tomato sauce out of Frankie's hair, and I decided Howard could just wear a dirty shirt the rest of the afternoon. I told the boys I'd play a game with them, and after much wrangling, they agreed to play hide-and-seek. They wanted to play inside, but I told them we had to play in the backyard. That way, the house would stay clean, and Mrs. Anderson would ask me to babysit again. Maybe she'd even pay me extra. Frankie said he would be it first, which surprised me. I thought they'd want me to be it. Frankie closed his eyes and started counting to 20. I hid behind a big sack of old newspapers in the garage. I heard Frankie yell, "Ready or not, here I come!" And then I didn't hear anything more. I waited and waited, but he never came near the garage. Finally, I stood up and peeked out the garage door. The boys were nowhere in sight. I began to feel a little nervous, so I stepped outside in full view. Nobody said, "I spy!" Nobody said anything at all. The yard was silent, but a terrible banging was coming from upstairs in the front side of the Andersons' house. I ran to the back door. It was locked. I raced around to the front door. It was locked, too. I pounded on the door with both fists and shouted, "Hey, you guys, open the door and let me in!" "Go away," they yelled. "We don't want a babysitter!" I tried to pick the locks. I looked under the doormat for a spare key. I tried to jimmy open the bathroom window. I begged and pleaded with the boys to let me in. When Mrs. Anderson got home at 5:30, I was sitting on the front steps, rehearsing the speech I planned to give her. It wasn't necessary. When I told her they'd lock me out, she just shrugged, handed me my pay, and said she'd call me again. Then she got out her key and opened the front door. I have no idea what she found inside. Whatever it was, it must not have been too terrible, because she called the next day and asked me to babysit again. I told her I was busy. No amount of money in the world is worth another afternoon with Frankie, Howard, and Brendan.
Nellie from the Fighting Days by Wendy Lill. My name is Nellie McClung, and I'm a disturber. Disturbers are never popular. Nobody likes an alarm clock in action, no matter how grateful they are later for its services. But I've decided that I'm going to keep on being a disturber. I'm not going to pull through life like a thread that has no knot. I want to leave something behind when I go, some small legacy of truth, some word that will shine in a dark place. And I want that word to be democracy. Democracy for women. Because I'm a firm believer in women, in their ability to see things and feel things and improve things. I believe that it is women who set the standards for the world, and it is up to us, the women of Canada, to set the standards high. Maybe I'm sort of a dreamer. Maybe I'm sort of naive. But I look at my little girls and boys, and I think I want a different world for them than the one I was born into. I look at them and my heart cries out when I see them slowly turn towards the roles that the world has carved for them. My girls, a life of cooking and sewing and servicing the needs of men. And the boys, scrapping and competing in the playground. Then right up into the corridors of government. Or even worse, the battlefields. I want them to have a choice about their lives. We mothers are going to fight for the rights of our little girls to think and dream and speak out. We're going to refuse to bear and rear sons to be shot at faraway battlefields. Women need the vote to bring about a better, more equitable, peaceful society. And we're going to get it.
Akous, Man Standing Above Ground, by Janice Akous Pelletier and Brenda Zeman. Running has always been a tradition in my family. It was thoughts of my Musham that inspired me as I first played with the idea of becoming a runner myself. Finally, one day, I thought, Janice Akous, you are the granddaughter of Paul Akous, one of the great long-distance runners, so what are you doing? Get out there and run. It's in your blood. I remember that first morning I went out to run. It was a warm day in March. The last of winter's cold was disappearing. It reminded me of another such morning a long time ago, the first time I met my Musham. My dad told us we were going to the reserve, to a powwow. You know, coming from the city, the only knowledge I had of my people were images I had seen in movies, rough and wild-looking creatures. When we drove through the gate, I saw a number of tents set up. There were children and dogs running about. Almost immediately, my dad's face broke out in a wide grin, and then I saw this man coming towards us. The sound of bells tinkled from his moccasins as they softly struck the ground. His face was painted up and he wore a bonnet of feathers. Grandfather? I said. And I remember him replying, Nusissim, I'm your Musham. You call me Musham. My memories were interrupted by city traffic that squeezed me to the outer limits of the road like I was an intruder. So I turned around and started jogging towards open country. My Musham always hated cars. He would never ride in them. He walked everywhere. I remember the first time I discovered he was a runner. A Moonyaw, or a white man, had come out to the reserve to paint his picture. I asked him why that man was there. He motioned for me to sit down beside him, and then he began to tell me his story. He talked about his father, old Samuel Akous, and his grandfather, Kawich, both famous runners. He told me of places he had raced in, places that seemed like they were on the other side of the world, like Madison Square Gardens in New York City, Vancouver and Winnipeg. As he talked, the age disappeared, and he looked strong and proud. I reminded myself that I have a long way to go to achieve the kind of inner strength he had, and I turned and headed for home. As I ran, I thought of how he must have felt when he returned home from racing. He was a hero, a world-class runner. But on the reserve, every aspect of his life was controlled by an Indian agent. My Musham was a proud man, rich in the knowledge of his culture, yet prohibited by law from carrying on the traditions of his grandfathers. I can still hear him proudly speaking of the rain dance and the joy he felt as a grass dancer. But I also remember the Sunday ritual when he would worship the Christian God. Rather than hold his head high in pride as he did when he spoke of the rain dance, he hung his head as he entered the house of worship. Anger came over me as I remember the way he was treated, but almost as soon as it came, it was gone. I thought of the years when I watched my grandparents grow old, my Kukum bedridden with illness, my Musham always by her side. When she slept, he would sit with us kids, him in the middle and us all around. He told us then about the strengths and the beliefs of our people, the Soto. He tried to teach us our language and instill values within us by telling us stories. I remember one thing he told me. Never throw your hair away when you comb it. He said your hair is your strength. he reached into his pocket and showed me a little white bear. He told me he kept his and my Kukum's hair and always wrapped it around the white bear. This always kept them safe. Then he put it back in the pocket closest to his heart. My Kukum and Mushum were two unique spirits. Their home on the reserve was a special meeting place for all my cousins, aunts, and uncles. That special feeling isn't there anymore. As I got to the last part of my run, I slowed down to a walk so I could cool down. Because of all the running, my legs were numb and my feet felt as though they weren't touching the ground. It was then I finally really understood my grandfather's name, Akus, man standing above ground.